This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
This is Matt Moore of Coffee with Kenobi, and you are listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Droids in Distress, the second episode in Season 1. Joining us on today's show is Matt Moore, professional reporter and writer, as well as the comic scribe for Coffee with Kenobi. Matt's talents as a writer, as well as his lifelong passion for Star Wars, have enhanced our show the moment we had the good fortune to become acquainted with him. His knowledge of the Star Wars universe helped to make him the perfect guest to join us to discuss this Craig Wiseman penned episode, and we're happy to share a cup of coffee with him. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here. I really appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you being a part of Coffee with Kenobi and your excellent writing and reporting, and we know you know a thing or two about how to tell a story, so you are an excellent person to have on to talk about this, and let's just jump right into it, gentlemen. Droids in Distress, Corey, I think it's interesting, right before we started taping, you told me kind of your thoughts when you heard the title of this and how that kind of changed when you saw the episode. What are your overall opinions of Droids in Distress?
Yeah, you sent me a text saying it was online for free to download. And I was like, I'll just take a stab at it and check it out. So I did and downloaded it. And didn't get really a chance to look at it. But, you know, just droids in general, I think I was like, oh, just kind of a throwaway episode maybe or something that was going to be very interesting, something like Premiere. It was just going to be something that we just got to get our feet wet a little bit. And I didn't really think about it too much. And then I actually ended up sitting down and watching it and, like, was just engrossed in the episode. I was just loving it. I loved the atmosphere. I loved the play of the characters. Obviously, we already introduced to them from the premiere. And just get them to, you know, get out and stretch their legs a little bit as characters and see how they interact and just how this new little setup we've got going here, how it works as they run their missions and run into characters and just how they play off each other. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the animation game. Was a lot of really well done. Obviously, seeing classic characters like C-3PO and R2-D2 was a really big joy to me. I really enjoyed them again. The Anthony Daniels, his voice is just dead on. I mean, the guy hasn't lost a beat. And just seeing all that stuff just wrapped up in this episode was just really great.
What about you, Matt? What are your overall opinions of Droids in Distress?
I have to admit, I am impressed with the timbre, the quality of the show's writing, and the direction that the storytelling is going in. The fact that they did not wait to jump right into the canon part of this show just astounded me. And I was impressed, very much so, with the multiple layers of the social upheaval of contrasting some of the sort of PTSD issues for Zeb, as well as feeling upfront this tie to the Imperial enslavement and domination of his world. But I was also impressed by the fact that we got to see R2-D2 and C-3PO, which have always been my two favorite characters, and the fact that they haven't changed. And it's pretty obvious that they have not changed from The Phantom Menace all the way up through Episode 6 in terms of their personalities and their ideals and, of course, their bumblingness, which, of course, is C-3PO all the way.
Yeah, I agree with you both. And in fact, as taken as I was with A Spark of Rebellion, this, to me, I enjoyed it twice as much, if that's even possible, as I did the premiere episode, because you have that that chemistry of R2 and 3PO that enhance everything. You see real cost. You see a lot of things that are brought up with Zeb, where we start to see how Rebels is going to handle characters and layers and what makes them tick. What has evolved their psyche into wanting to be this band of burgeoning rebels that wants to fight against the mighty galactic empire. And it was exciting. The musical cues. It was just an overall tremendous episode that I absolutely loved. And Matt, you brought up something very engaging right away. When we talk about Zeb and this post-traumatic stress disorder that he clearly seems to be harboring in some way, shape, or form. So we get to see Zeb's world in a very personal way. How did you feel about how that was handled, and what is that kind of showing us about Zeb as a character? And Matt, why don't we just start with you?
I thought they handled it very adeptly. I spent as part of my career doing combat correspondency, I've been on the field of battle as it has been underway, and then I've seen it the after effects when some of the troops have come home, and it was evident to me that there was some very solid research done into this when they were putting pen to paper, as it were, to tell this story. The emotional heft of the reaction on Zeb's face when he sees the Imperial, whose name just vanished right out of my frontal lobe.
Agent Callus.
Yes, Agent Callus. Thank you. Seeing Agent Callus bearing that honor guard's weapon that only the honor guard could have, and then to hear those stinging words of, it was I who gave the order. And you could just see the rage and the resentment and the seething fury boiling up in Zeb's animated eyes. And I could just, it was almost like the hair on the back of my neck was standing at attention, because it was clear that a nerve was struck hard.
And not to mention the fact that when you see, we already saw that Agent Callus is evil based on the very first episode, because he kicks a stormtrooper for bringing up a Jedi into a ravine, played off his humor. And then we see this, and we see the almost borderline ebullience or glee in his eyes when he mentions, as you just so deftly put it, that he is the guy who is helping to be responsible for wiping out most of Zeb's race, which I found very personal, very horrifying and traumatic. And it also kind of breaks down some of the layers of Zeb, because when you see how he and Ezra interact, I get there's this whole kind of big brother, little brother vibe. You start to see that there's a heart, there's a soul, and there's a reason why he's got this chip on his shoulder. And the fact that he's able to play off something so traumatic as genocide, basically, and still maintain some sort of semblance of a soul, shows you that Rebels is going to bring us, as you mentioned, strong writing, strong acting performances, and strong characters, which is something that I think Star Wars can only benefit from and just add to this all-encompassing universe that we love so much. And what about you, Corey? How did you feel about Zeb and what we learned about him through this?
Yeah, we mentioned this in our debut episode as far as the premiere. We talked about Zeb and his reactions to some of Ezra's, things. He's kind of pushed him aside and give him a hard time and things like that. And it kind of gives him a light into his world and what he has to go through. Maybe he doesn't necessarily like the things he does, but he has to do it just, to survive. I think too, it's very personal to him, and to see him, we see him early on in this episode, we see him take on some stormtroopers and just kick butt, in a way, and we're like, oh, nothing can knock him down. All of a sudden we have this other sequence with Agent Callus and this battle they have. And like you said, Matt, I mean, it just like brings out this emotion in this character that we didn't expect. I mean, this is episode two, and here we are just gripping with this emotions, and he's beaten down and obviously, put in a certain position in front of all his friends, and just it brings out his failings, I think, too. I mean, but also makes him a really great character just to follow along with and just interact with and be able to grow with, too. I think it's really nice to see this as a second episode to say, like, they're not going to just throw these characters to the side and just play them as they will. They really care about these characters. And again, like you said, Dan, the voice acting is incredible. I think the voice work of Zeb is just really well done.
Yeah, it's incredible. And Steve Bloom does an amazing bang up job about this, adding these dimensions to this character that they joked in the first episode about how he was a hairless Wookiee. and they have a little bit of fun with that. But there's some heavy stuff going on here on this show that's aimed at children, but there are adult themes there, which is why I think there's going to be so much appeal.
Well, and there's one aspect that I think we cannot overlook is the depths that they are giving these imperial characters.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that always struck me about the Empire, particularly when the first time I saw Star Wars back in 1979 at a drive-in in the Kentucky Flatwoods, was how arrogant Grand Moff Tarkin was. Mm-hmm. And it's very obvious that there is just this streak of basically endorsed bullyism, if you yes. will, amongst these junior Imperial officers who frankly are, I would say, bordering on psychotic, and how anybody like that could be given control or command of anything is simply astounding. But I think it goes to show the depths to which the Empire's lack of civility, even indeed lack of humanity, which is ironic considering it's supposed to be so xenophobic.
Yes,
that they are just oozing, contempt for everyone and everything.
Well, and you've got, it's almost like when you brought up the idea of Tarkin and all these arrogant, basically you've got all these arrogant wasps that are out there, asserting their will and their borderline narcissism in some cases. And Agent Callus is someone, I was going to talk about him later, but we may as well talk about him now in regards to Zeb and his role in wiping out a lot of Zeb's species. Which, by the way, as a side note, would make it hard for Zeb to hide anywhere since his kind is so rare. But maybe the word didn't get out. Okay. That's hard to say. But yeah, you've got this very unique, duplicitous character who is loyal to the Emperor and the Empire. But you just get a sense that we're actually going to see an officer portrayed in a nuanced fashion, which is really not something we've particularly seen. You saw hints of it with Tarkin and I haven't finished reading the book Tarkin yet, but I have a feeling Callus is going to be a whole new breed for us.
I think you're exactly right on that aspect too. I mean, I think we're going to probably see this guy as the series goes on. The depravity that he will sink to,
yes,
the lengths that he will go to will know no bounds. It's going to be interesting to me to see how they are going to balance this borderline psychosis with it being a children's TV show. Clearly I think if anyone can do it, Greg Weisman can do this as well as the crew behind the show.
Hey, when you're watching this, it almost makes you sad to know that he's not going to be around for season two.
I have to agree with you on that, but I mean, things are said or done for a reason, and I do obviously, with news that he's going to be writing the first arc in this new Kanan comic book from Marvel Comics, which, by the way, is going to be an ongoing series.
That's cool.
Before it was announced formally at New York Comic Con, Marvel had said it was going to be a 5-issue miniseries, but from the reaction, and they cited the reaction to the premiere of Rebels as their reason to make it an ongoing series. Now, I know Weisman is going to be writing the first story arc, which is now going to be the first 5 issues. Whether he's going to be staying on with the book for longer, it's not known yet, and Marvel is keeping its cards close to the vest, obviously consulting with Lucasfilm before saying anything. So.
Well, that's exciting. That's very exciting. So we've got a little bit of breaking news. So that's always a lot of fun. Do you have any idea what time period it's going to be? I assume it's going to be before Rebels.
It will be definitely before Rebels. As a matter of fact, in talking to Weisman last week, it's basically going to be set around as his training as a Jedi.
Oh wow!
Oh, that's cool.
So we are going to get a peek and a look at what molded him into being what he's going to be, and Weisman in our interview was very enthused about the possibility of doing this, and he's he's into, as I like to term things, you know, he's pretty stoked.
Yes.
Tasked to do this. So it's just, I think it's going to be an interesting series. And I think, you know, one thing he had mentioned to me is, you know, clearly, you know, as everybody knows, you know, Lucasfilm doesn't do flashbacks.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe that may change with under J.J. Abrams, who knows? But clearly it's not like, you know, they're going to be able to stop in the middle of a Rebels ongoing TV show and do an episode that's set 15 years previous or 10 years previous or 10 years prior. So, but you know, by doing this, he, you know, by looking at comic books as a possibility, you know, as a way to sort of tell these backstories, it's going to be help to expand the canon. I know I'm going to break up character. This is going to be out next week, right?
Yeah, we're not putting this out until after actually this episode airs. So that's coming out October 13th or 14th. So we're definitely going to be well past the announcement.
Okay, so it'll be past Saturday. Okay, that's great. All right, good. I don't feel bad. Because this series, so far it's called Star Wars: Kanan, the Last Padawan.
Wow.
It focuses on Kanan when he was Caleb Doom, and he was under the instruction of Depa Balaba. And it looks at how did he survive Order 66? How did Caleb become Kanan? How did he learn to survive? And, you know, some of this was obviously hinted at, however vaguely, in the novel.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the chance to see how he became this, you know, as I referred to him, I tweeted once, tweeted out when I was reading the novel, and was that he is one smug SOB.
I remember that.
So, you know, and I think with this this series, it's going to give people a chance to get to know Kanan better. And I think it's also going to, I think we may be privy to the ground floor of seeing a new Han Solo being built and being developed.
Oh, wow.
Wow. I'm over here freaking out because there's just so much, so much that's exciting about this. And I'm glad you brought up that tweet that you sent out, because so much of what Kanan was in A New Dawn, I would say probably 75% of it, made it hard for me to enjoy him as a character because he was so smug, but not in a very charismatic way. And you start to understand why. And by the time we get to Rebels, it seems as though he is well past that, and he's accepted the mantra of what he's going to be and what he's about. So that'll be interesting to do. It seems like, Corey, we're going to have Matt back on when we have a show on our regular show just about Kanan.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's not just Kanan that we're going to see. I mean, one of the things that struck me about this this first episode, if you will, since it's not the pilot,
right,
was you could see the impatience of
Ezra.
You know, when does a Jedi training start? I want to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this. And my 7-year-old daughter and my 9-year-old son are going, oh, this is so cool, this is so cool, and I'm sitting there, you know, watching them watch this on our little tiny computer monitor, since we actually don't have a television or any kind of cable here in the house, and all I could think of was, I feel like Yoda, because, you know, so much anger, so much impatience in this boy, you know, a Jedi he cannot be.
There's no doubt about that. And before we get too deeply back into this notion of the Jedi and Ezra, because I do want to spend some time on that, I want to go back to what you said earlier about seeing R2 and 3PO. And for me, like, I actually had a laugh out loud moment of C-3PO when they were shooting at him at the end. You're here to rescue me, and he's running away. I thought that was hilarious. And I can honestly say this is the first time the C-3PO has been represented as he was in the original trilogy since 1983. I always felt there was something lacking about him in the prequels, and they almost like took particular traits and made them the essence of what he is, and that's always kind of bothered me. He's pretentious. He's a bit prissy, but he's fun, and I think the fun element of him got lost in prequels, and it's very much back in Rebels. It was so nice to see these two together. And I think we can safely put to bed any doubt as far as at the end of episode 3, it's clear that C-3PO gets his mind wiped. R2 does not.
Well, and that's the one thing that's always struck me about R2. As a matter of fact, you know, when I went to see the prequels, you know, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, I was walking out of the theater with a friend of mine from college, and he asked me, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, to me, the underlying thread of the entire prequel trilogy has simply been this. R2-D2 is just a horrible, 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 horrible entity because he's known all of this and he didn't tell anybody."
Yeah, that's true.
And so, but I think what we're seeing now is the reason why is that basically R2 has been the wonderful little mole.
That's right.
I mean, just, you know, obviously spoilers are spoilers and spoilers, but, you know, the way this episode ended, it was just, my gosh, it was perfection because it sort of ties into the fact this is why R2 has always kept quiet. This is why R2, you know, upon seeing, you know, Chewbacca, you know, everyone, "Oh, Chewie, what's up, dude?"
Yeah.
Yeah, also, I like to say, too, he didn't... 3PO...
Why he was so excited to see Obi-Wan in A New Hope.
Precisely.
Yeah. Didn't 3PO say something about, what secret mission? You know, yes. He has this phrase. You're thinking, okay, they're not obviously looking for Obi-Wan. He's doing something else. So it seems like, R2-D2 just definitely was a really great character to see again. In this, just, you hit it home, Dan, where it was definitely right from the original trilogy. I mean, just I don't know, made me feel love. I wanted to hug this episode.
That's a bumper sticker. It's funny you should say that because I watched the episode and basically I wanted to buy it a carnation and take it to the fall formal.
Then, you know, are you going to wear gold or blue? That's a whole other thing.
I know. It's, so
so when R2 and 3PO show up, is another reminder, this one not as subtle, where we see evidence of a class structure in Rebels, even from where everyone is sitting on the shuttle. Which is certainly a call to Star Tours, which we'll talk about later. But let's talk about the class structure and how Wiseman is introducing these different ideas and ideals of the Empire and how they treat their citizens. Corey, why don't you start with that?
Yeah, I guess that when I noticed it was when the transport droid driving the little shuttle turned around and said, "This is Imperial business," and kind of his visor went, you know, down. And I was like, oh, well, even it has, like, you know, knows its class and knows where it belongs. And even I don't want to say the Imperial, was she an Imperial agent?
I don't know what kind. She was. It sounds like she was some sort of a senator.
Some liaison or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Something.
So it's, I mean, even she was just, you know, sat in the front of the bus type deal. You know, everybody else, the droids that sit in the back, obviously, you know, big time status symbol there. And like we talked about too, the Imperials themselves are just very pompous and very, you know, they got this the air about them that you know, you can't, how dare you touch me with those dirty fingers or that type of thing. And it's just, it's definitely fitted out to where there's going to be that struggle within the series too. Yes, there's gonna be fighting and action and things like that, but also there's just gonna be this struggle of, you know, this class of people trying to find their place and knowing where to fit in and how to get by. And we see that even in the first episode, we see the shopkeeper was getting harassed and it's just such good storytelling. And just, it's just, they wrap these themes up so well and structure it not to be, you know, in your face, but they do it in a way that, you know, gives you gratitude to the characters themselves. So it makes them rise above. So it's well done.
Now, what about you? Anything with class structure that you wanted to address?
I think the issue of class and even if you delve down deeper, I think it's almost like a caste system.
Very much
that we're seeing being set up. If you know, not necessarily from world to world, but I think it's an underlying theme of the entire Galactic Empire. I mean, clearly, humans are at the top of the scale. The off-worlders of the Z or the aliens are maybe worthy of some consideration, but only if the Empire benefits from it. And I do think that basically we are seeing what is in effect an occupying force from planet to planet. In some cases, they are just a presence, you know, troopers walking down the street. In other cases, they have scorched the planet down to the core. Nice. In other cases, they have enslaved an entire race. Or in the more severe cases, they have committed genocide and wiped them from existence. And that's clearly, it all harkens back to the old adage that, someone's insurgent is someone's freedom fighter or rebel. But clearly, it's obvious that there is a unifying force here, that the Empire is just full of very bad people that should not be allowed to exist. And the fact that it does exist is an affront to anything that's decent in the entire galaxy.
And you can only hope that as we're starting to meet more of these members of the Imperial Navy and the Imperial Fleet, you got to hope that there's going to be some there that are having doubts as to perhaps the motivation of the Empire and kind of what's going on, because everyone's been duped into thinking it was a good thing, and we're starting to see the seeds of the rebellion, the seeds of there's something not right about this, we're oppressed, they're not treating people with human decency and compassion. So you see a lot of things that, as you said, Matt, we're going to see developed on and on. There's so many things that harken back to history, world history, United States history, that I find interesting. And let's talk about...
Well, it also jives with contemporary history. I mean, because if you look...
Well, sure.
I mean, if you look at the Arab Spring, it was stemmed from people who were finally unified and upset over the way they were being treated. And look how that blossomed and spread across the entire region.
You bet. And then you see these things here where these disruptors, these miniature atomic bombs, if you will, because they're called disruptors. They disrupted Zeb's people. They disrupted Zeb's world. They do a number on the walkers, which is pretty fun. And then so we've got these weapons that they're selling. And then Kanan, at first blush when you watch it, he doesn't seem to care so much about who's buying them. As long as he's getting money. But then later, thank goodness, he says, no, we don't think the Empire's getting these, so let's just sell these guns and make some money. That's an interesting thing to do. I suppose drastic times call for drastic measures, but it just shows you what a dire situation these rebels are in.
Well, it also shows you the ambiguity of fighting the power.
Of war, yeah. And what kind of doubt that brings in doing what you have to do to survive because of your ideals. This is like a global, galaxy-spanning example of, hey, we got to stick it to the man.
Mm-hmm. And how willing are you to alter your ideals?
That's right.
Reach your goal.
Right.
Which is surely going to show how there are different levels to these characters that are going to make them so interesting for us. And Corey, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, even, Kanan's struggle with Zeb there, where, Zeb made a really personal comment, these really bothered me, we should get rid of them. And he's like, no, we need to make some money off these. And even just their personal relationship was in distress there, I think, a little bit.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. It seems like Kanan was more focused on the mission. I mean, obviously, he's trying to make ends meet to keep the ship together, as they put it. And Zeb was kind of like, let's forget this. We'll do it a different way. And I feel like it was kind of a rift a little bit in their relationship.
Really? See, I took that as he was sort of balming his friend's deep distress and trying to put a positive spin on something where there's not a lot of positive to be had, but just trying to get him to focus in a different way. I didn't see any rift there at all.
Oh, see, I think I felt like Kanan was a little bit charming and charismatic about how he kind of, put it into those terms as far as, he was trying to like, hey, we'll make money off this. Don't worry about it. It's all good type feel.
Yeah.
And he does kind of change a little bit further on to the episode a little bit, knowing that they're not going to get to the Empire. So, it's I think there's a little mix up of friendship there.
Matt, what did you feel the same way?
I think that I did, because I think as Corey was drawing these parallels, it all sort of flows together. Does that make sense, or am I speaking too broadly?
No, well, yeah, I would like to see just kind of explain on that a little bit. It makes sense, but I'm curious to hear why you say that there's a nice rhythm to that.
Well, I just think it was the way the cadence. I think it was the cadence of how it was brought forth.
You mean to say the way that how the impact of the disruptors was not necessarily, you know, it was personal, but also it was a broad scope too, and you know, in a way that's like you guys were saying, kind of got to look at the bigger picture here, and yeah, this might impact you in a personal way, but you know, we do this for the good of the bigger goal,
which doesn't sound like a rift at all.
It's not so much a rift. I think you have five succinct, disparate, and separate personalities,
right,
all of whom are brought together by these circumstances, and who so far are learning to mesh fairly well as a team. But yet at the same time, just because they're doing that, they're not, I don't think that they're going to lose sight of their individual goals or ideals. And I think that's going to be part of the journey that we as viewers and we as fans of the saga are going to see develop, to see how these characters, for lack of a better term, you know, it may sound sort of pedantic, but how they mature. Now, clearly, you know, characters like Hera and Zeb and Kanan, they already sort of have a maturity that's well beyond their age, mm-hmm. Because of what they've seen, because of what they've experienced, and because of what they've done. And I think because of what they are going to be willing to do. Sabine and Ezra, I believe, are going to be sort of the grounding of this group. And I think that as these others, you know, as the members sort of wrestle with their own personal ideals, they're going to look to Ezra and to Sabine as sort of the barometer, if you will, almost as if, you know, the literal, they're the ones who are pinching me to make sure that I stay the course and to make sure that that it's not a dream, but at the same time, that it's also not a nightmare.
Yes. And they add a little bit of levities at times to very precarious situations that they're going to find themselves in, and then they have to deal with gangsters like Visago, who is a very interesting character. This is the second episode, the second time we've seen him. There's just something about him that you want to like. Very similar to, and his name is escaping me at the moment. Hondo. He reminds me very much of Hondo Inaka from the Clone Wars, who is one of my favorite characters from that series.
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, but he, in fact, I almost had to take a second glance to make sure that they weren't the same voice, and they're not.
Yeah.
Jim Cummings is the voice of Hondo. But Visago, at the end, he says, you know, I hope you live to fight another day, and I don't have this verbatim, but if not, he basically says, oh, well, and he speeds off, which just shows you, This is where these guys are. This is who they have to rely on for their survival in many ways. But you also wonder too if there's going to be more to Visago than meets the eye. If he's just going to be, I mean, he even has horns. So I mean, the metaphor is pretty clear there.
Well, clearly he's a scoundrel, and we all know how much love the Star Wars saga has for scoundrels.
That's right. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. He's definitely a fence for all their goods and whatnot. And they even debated, you know, obviously doing the job in the first place. You know, it seems like it's been a past interference of some of the characters and bringing it up. And Kanan doesn't seem to have a problem with working with them, and maybe some of the others do. And again, you know, there's a rift in some of their relationships too. Again, I bring that up. It seems that they're going to be, you know, like you said, Matt. There's five different folks on the ship, and they're all looking to do the same thing, but yet, you know, there's these little, and you know, little ideals that they have that are just personal to them that maybe don't mesh with the overall plan, and it's going to bring up some problems, I think, here and there throughout the series. And this,
so you're seeing more tension than I am. I almost see too much cohesion too early on. I mean, there's probably a lot that we're going to learn about as time goes on, but I feel like they're almost uncomfortably unified so early on.
See, I think they do work together good as a team. They've got their plays down. They've got their you know who can do what, and they run a mission well. They do a good job. But I think you know, by the end of the day, they kind of have to struggle with, you know, what all the happenings on that went on that day, you know, how they feel about, you know, even Ezra talking about his training. He's kind of keyed on the, well, what about my training? What about all this other stuff? And I want to really train. And, you know, it's just, he's looking forward to that. And like you said, Matt, he's going to mature enough to be able to get to that point. But I think too, it's going to come up a lot, I think, throughout the series, these little parts of people, just where they're from and their backgrounds, and
maybe when you're saying rifts, maybe you just mean tension.
Tension just between the characters.
Because to me, a rift is hard to repair, but tension is just part of a family dynamic.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying. I shouldn't say rift, but I mean, I'm just for lack of a better term, I think it's they're just playing these characters really well. I mean, Greg Wiseman, like you said, has done a good job of just playing up on each of their characteristics as a family unit.
Well, I think we're also seeing the fact that, you know, this is a family unit, but it's not every day that a family unit has to come face the fact that, you know, when they wake up in the morning, by the time it's nightfall, one of them may be dead.
Yes.
True.
It's a very good
sort of, there is sort of that blend of this, you know, devil may care, but also this sort of, you know, let's keep a little bit of a distance, you know, between us. Because I don't want to get too close.
That's right. And it's a slippery slope that they're going to have to walk. And it seems like they've got a really nice formula there. And on the first show where we talked about Hera, I mentioned the fact that we've got this strong character who always is staying behind and staying on the ship. And she's not really getting mixed into the immediate planetary action. But we see that on this one, she runs out, she takes a couple of shots at a walker, but her weapon is not a disruptor, so it doesn't do the amount of damage that the disruptor does. But she starts to assert herself a little bit more on the battlefield more immediately, so I was happy to see that.
That was a nice play, because, I mean, clearly Hera has got a very tactically oriented mind.
Yes, she is the leader, really. I mean, I know, I guess you could argue that, but
I don't think you can argue that. And I think anyone who would attempt to argue that is merely just trying to dish platitudes.
Yeah.
Hera is the leader of this group. Kanan is the enigma, that's for sure, but it is Hera who's got the cool head.
Yeah.
It's almost, you know, we could basically entitle an episode Cool Hand Hera.
I like that. She's got her lekus that are cool under pressure.
There you go.
And she, even though I don't know if she defers to Kanan, but she certainly actively seeks his input. And in many ways, she does defer to him and where he wants to go. He's the Jedi. But I think you can safely say that she's the leader.
I think, no, and you are correct in that assertion. I mean, you know, she is deferring to him because of that Jedi mystique.
Yeah.
You know, and as the book noted, I mean, you know, we're not entirely sure how much she knows yet about Kanan and right. his Jedi activities, but clearly, you know, as the book said, you know, she remembers the effect of the Jedi on her planet and her people.
Yes. So
there is sort of this
very much respect.
You know, like, oh, but you know, he's also a human because, you know, he's been a smug SOB.
That's right. Which he seems to very much have grown out of. Again, I really want to see what happened between A New Dawn and this one, because he's certainly not the drunken laissez-faire kind of guy. Now he's got his focus, so he doesn't have to hide who he is anymore.
Precisely, yeah. He can sort of he's been able to, you know, to cast aside that cloak of anonymity.
I like that. You should be a writer.
I might could do that. I can't sing and I can't dance and I can't sell hats.
Well, you never know. So one thing I want to point out, this is just a fun thing. I having worked at Disney World and being such a Disney guy, the fact that we see Rex from Star Tours as the pilot of the little vessel, and I looked at the credits. I did catch his name. It's RX-24, and it was even voiced by Paul Reubens, who better known to most people as Pee-wee Herman. But Paul Reubens is the voice of Rex on Star Tours as well. So I thought that was really, really cool that they took the time to do that. And yeah, there are a lot of other Easter eggs as well. Like you mentioned, Matt, the horn cantina creature, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head right now. But there's a lot of little things like that we get to see.
And I also saw that, the speeder that the gangster,
Visago
had. I've seen that speeder before. You know, it's
I can't think of where, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
I don't know if it was in the special edition of Star Wars: A New Hope, where you know when they were walking around the Mos Eisley.
Oh yeah,
but you know, I've seen that before.
Or it could have been in a sketchbook. Or I mean, Filoni's famous for taking things he's seen from different sketchbooks or things growing up as a Star Wars fan that he's inserting into the series.
I got to tell you, you know, as an aside, you know, I mean, I bought all the sketchbooks as they came out. You know,
yeah.
First movie, the second movie, the third movie from, you know, 77 to 83. And, you know, it is just the you know, the 10-year-old that's trapped inside of me is just freaking out to, you know, to see these designs in fluid motion and full color on the screen. It's like, oh, my, this is so incredible.
It's like a love letter to Star Wars in Star Wars that in a way that we've never really seen presented.
I agree, and it's a wonderful. It's been said before, and I'm sure it will be said multiple times in the years to come. But it's a pay-in to Ralph McQuarrie, and it's a pay-in to you know the initial and the first efforts to bring this world to life. And that's, you know, part of me is just, I don't know. I was talking to a friend of mine from high school, you know, and we were big Star Wars fans in high school out in Colorado. And I texted him over the weekend. I said, hey, you know, I think our 15-year-old selves would find it inconceivable to know that not only are we learning about what led to the events of Star Wars: A New Hope, but we can watch it on our telephone whenever we want. Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, that's great.
Well,
I digress.
Yeah, no, but it's true. It's just it's pretty exciting. Talk about a new dawn for us as Star Wars fans. I think you and I are probably similar ages, and I have similar kind of reflections on that as well. So it's really, really exciting. Before we move on to give our overall grade for the episode, do you have any last-minute thoughts or reflections, either of you, on what we saw, any themes, ideas, characters, any lines, just anything that kind of jumps out at you before we wrap up?
Yeah, I'll jump in and say that this, I mean, we talked about this in the kind of our first episode of Rebels Reactions and how it just really feels Star Wars. You know, it doesn't feel like it's trying to be something else. It's not trying to plagiarize anything that's out there existing. It feels really like we are in this world. We're running around with these characters, and I can believe it. I can jump in and go along for the ride, and this episode proves it. I mean, like you said in the beginning, this has so many layers to the conversation to grow on, to build on. And if they're coming out this, you know, this hard and this full out of the gate like this, I cannot wait for the rest of the series just to move ahead and get to know these characters more and dive into more little, you know, Easter eggs and just new characters we see in the background and you know, just how they work in little every aspect of this great saga. So yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I really hope the next one is either as good or better, and I hope that it's, you know, it doesn't like a not a downer or not. So we'll have to wait and see.
Well, based on some conversations I've had with some contacts in Lucasfilm, apparently it just gets better and better and better, and is as much fun as we're having so far. We ain't seen nothing yet, so that's very encouraging.
Well, and I think to me the greatest aspect of this show thus far is that it's not afraid to cast forward, if you will, signs that not all is going to be peaches and cream.
Right.
That, you know, there is going to be conflict, that there is going to be distress, that there is going to be emotionally withering events happening. You know, part of me wants to get really close to a couple of these characters and really invest the time, but part of me is pretty convinced that it may end up in tears, bitter, bitter tears.
Which could make it a Shakespearean tragedy, which I think would be fantastic as a teacher of literature, of course.
One can never go wrong in referencing Big Billy the Bard.
That's right. That's right. Our dear friend. As Ian Desher is somewhere smiling.
There you go.
So for me, one thing I want to throw out before we wrap up is again, we see the callbacks to John Williams, and I don't feel like it's pandering in this one either. I felt like it was appropriate. The scene with the walkers, we had the Battle of Hoth playing in the background, that music, which I thought was awesome. It just adds to the atmosphere. And actually, I think it sold a toy, because when I first saw the vehicles, I thought, oh, that's cool. It's like a preview to the AT-ST. But then when I saw it in action and Hera shooting at it and the Battle of Hoth theme in the background, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to buy this thing now. So mission accomplished. But I thought it was a tremendous, tremendous episode. I enjoyed it even more than I did the first one. And I think I tweeted out, if this is what we have in store for us with Star Wars Rebels, then what a bright future it is going to be indeed. And I really think this is going to be the thing that's going to bridge the whole prequel versus OT people. I like both. I'm passionate about both. And I think this has nice little blends of both. The atmosphere here, there's a smorgasbord of Star Wars delight.
I think one of the important things about this series is the fact that it's going to generate an avalanche of good tidings, particularly as we roll toward and through 2015 up to the release date of Episode 7.
Yes.
And I think it's going, I think it is building a bedrock, like you said, of linking fans of the prequel trilogy and fans of the original trilogy, but more importantly, new fans. Like my kids, yeah. You know, who haven't really seen any Star Wars movies yet, but are familiar with it because their old man is secretly still 9 years old. And yep. I think we're going to see more and more of that. And, you know, this show is not just a venue with which to sell toys. No. This show clearly is a legitimate, serious, well-written programming event that tells the story of people in crisis, of tyranny being tackled. And it's going to have its ups and downs, and it's going to have this emotional heft. And as someone who grew up with the original trilogy, as someone who enjoyed actually the prequels, you know, and as someone who has, you know, kept a love for Star Wars burning since 1977, I couldn't be more exhilarated, and I couldn't be more happier or happy with what this team has wrought.
Well, I don't think either of us could wrap that up any better than you just stated, Matt. I very much agree with that. Lucas has done it again. Lucasfilm has done it again. And I keep mentioning Lucas, it's just a habit hard to break. We did see in the Rebels Recon after the first show that Dave Filoni did show the premiere episode to George Lucas, and he loved it. So that is very encouraging. I think he would be proud of where his Star Wars is going and where it's heading. And we have no reason but to feel optimistic about what's going on. So let's real quickly get an overall grade for this episode if we were going to grade this. And I'll go ahead and start. I'm going to give it an A. I gave the first one a B+. This one is certainly an A. Just it's got humor. It has the callback to the canon of the original characters from the OT. It's got some excitement, and there's real peril. We're seeing more about the cost and how that impacts everybody through the lens of tyranny. And how interesting! This is a Star Wars cartoon where no lightsabers make an appearance.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. What about you guys? How would you grade this one?
Yeah, it's an easy A for me. Again, yeah, it's I graded the first one as a B+ as well, and only because it was just getting its feet underneath itself. And I think this is just an easy A because they just hit all the right marks, like you said. And I'm looking forward to new episodes and just we've just been talking about it the last hour or so, and just enjoying it, just enjoying. A Star Wars for what it is, and that's all I can ask for. So, yeah.
Well, I like it. It's got a good beat, and you can dance to it. I'm going to go, if we're going to go with a letter grade,
yes.
I'm going to, not to buck the trend, but I'm going to go with a solid, very high B+, almost just at the periphery of an A-.
Really?
Because I think everything is there. The foundation is there. And I think we're going to see more quality as these episodes roll out, which is why I'm going to hold off in reserve and keep my A in reserve.
Mm.
Because trust me, a B plus, this high of a B plus, this series is getting into a good college, that's for sure. I think as we
scholarship, maybe.
I think as we get to the next few episodes, it's going to start. You know, it's going to be of the quality that it's that folks like Caltech or Auburn or Stanford or MIT are going to knock on his door, going, "Hey, come on over here."
I agree with you. I think there's just so much to be excited about. I feel like I say that almost every time on Coffee with Kenobi, but Star Wars is in good hands. Again, I think we can – hopefully people are putting to rest this notion that Disney is going to hurt Star Wars. All it's done is add to the canon in ways that we hadn't really seen before. So I'm pretty excited.
I think if anyone as of now still harbors any sort of reservations about Disney's stewardship of the Star Wars saga, I think they're just doing it to be contrarian.
Agreed. So, Matt, thank you again so much for sharing a cup of coffee with us. Before we let you go, we need to ask you our five questions that we ask all of our guests. But before we get to that, where can listeners find you if they want to reach out to you?
I am on the Twitters, if you will, at Gorilla Scribe, and it is spelled the classic way, GUERRILLASCRIBE, as in gorillas. The rebels. And you can also find me on Tumblr, and the address I can never remember. Let me take a look here. And I apologize for the clacking because I still use an old school keyboard.
No problem. And we'll have links to this in our show notes as well.
And I am you can find me at Gorillas in the Midst at gorillascribe.tumblr.com. And I think my sobriquet says it nicely: family, comics, Star Wars, beer.
In that order, right?
Basically, yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll see you at Celebration, and we can have one of those said beverages with you.
Count on it. I think that's going to be the I'm planning on pulling my two kids out of school and going.
So. Awesome.
That's makes you a good dad.
I try.
Very good. So we'll go ahead and as a member of the Coffee with Kenobi family, I'm sure you're very familiar with our five questions, which we ask each of our guests in a similar vein to Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton. So I'll go ahead and throw the first one your way. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Without a doubt, it's The Empire Strikes Back. It's just, there was something about the gravitas of that film that really struck me even as a 10-year-old watching it in the theater. And I saw it in the theater. We were actually on a 12-hour layover flying back from visiting my grandparents in the U.S., and we were flying back to Germany. And we had 12 hours, and so my dad and I ran to the city and caught an episode and caught a showing, and then got back to the airport in time to meet my mom and my baby sister, and we all flew back to Europe.
Cool.
That is awesome.
All right, Matt, your favorite Star Wars character?
Oh, gosh. It's going to be a tough one, but, you know, I've actually thought about this in listening to the previous podcast that you guys do so well.
Thank you.
I had always wondered what I was going to say if asked this, and it was always a tie between a power droid and R2-D2, but I'm going to have to say definitely, without doubt, it is R2-D2. There's just something about that little versatile astromech that I think appeals to the jack-of-all-trades and master-of-none that makes up myself.
I love that, jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none. That's pretty clever. What is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Oof. Oh, gosh.
And Rebels is only going to make this harder. I can think of some dialogue from the first
one. I know.
One
that's just going to be the, you know, I'm going to say, you know it to be true.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
You know it to be true.
Hmm. So. Say it to your kids, right?
Now, one of my proudest moments as a dad was I was sitting at the breakfast table with my kids, and my son, Jerry, you know, he's the older, he's 9, and my daughter, Harper, she's 7. I think they were 6 and 8 at the time, and we were having breakfast. It was a lazy Saturday morning, and my daughter had asked Jerry to pass her something, and he didn't do it. And she stopped, and just without missing a beat, in the proper tone, just looked at him and said, "You have failed me for the last time." I threw up my arms in glee. I prepared my acceptance speech for coolest dad of the year 2012, first, second, and third place.
I think you would have won it unanimously. That was pretty that's pretty great. And we're dads, so that's that. Our votes mean a lot.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Okay, the next question is, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
It's a good story behind this. I actually did collect, and I actually I paid for most of college by selling my Star Wars toys in 1988.
Wow.
Yeah, I did have a pretty fast collection because, my grandparents and family got me all the toys as I was a kid from 7 to basically about 15. And so we kept everything, not the boxes or anything. But back in 2012, when the Waldo Canyon fire tore through Colorado Springs, it burned down my family home and as well, and everything that I had in it. So it was all gone. So I've had to rebuild my collection. And so I have taken a different tack and just collected some of the old albums, the soundtracks and the story of Star Wars, or the story of Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back, and some of the old picture storybooks. But I'm going to have to say that my most prized possession, at least in my way, is the illustrated Star Wars universe that Ralph McQuarrie did.
Oh, nice.
And it was great because I had gone out to visit my mom for Christmas last year, and we went to this wonderful used bookstore, and I found it again. And it was an autographed copy, and it was autographed to Matt.
No kidding.
That's sweet.
That's phenomenal.
And I cannot be certain, but, there's a 50-50 chance it may have actually been mine before.
Wow.
But that's I don't know. There are a lot of Matts, despite my effort to copyright and trademark the name.
But, yeah, I think the Bible has one, too.
I know, but I've got a good lawyer, so...
So what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
I think probably the most direct one is the fact that you can stand tall in the face of adversity and know that if you have a network of people around you, that anything can be accomplished within reason. And one of the things I've always liked about the entire saga is that everyone is fallible, mm-hmm. and that people, that they do make mistakes. And I was particularly struck by the fact that Anakin Skywalker was redeemed at the end of Return of the Jedi. And I was also equally devastated to see how quickly he was manipulated and for all intents and purposes, abused and turned into something that he clearly was not.
Agreed.
Other than that, my other strong takeaway is the fact that the Jedi Council was just a bunch of know nothings.
Yes.
How anybody could just not see what was going on was just appalling.
The only way I make peace with that is thinking of how much the dark side clouds everything.
You're right, but I found that. As I got older, I don't know why I would have these internal debates with myself about whether or not the Jedi Order was aware of what was going on. But
because you're a Star Wars fan,
we all do.
Well, definitely, and I remember I was pondering. I was sitting there pondering it one night in the Iraqi desert back in 2004, looking at this vast vista of amazing starshine, and all I could think of was, the Jedi Order got what it deserved.
Wow.
It's just. All the signs were there, then, they ignored it. And you know what? Anakin did bring balance to the Force. He balanced it out. There were too many Jedi, not enough Sith.
Interesting. I always took it as the evil became too powerful and they had to level the playing field so that there was a little bit of good and bad in the universe, not so much bad.
Well, that's a valid point, too. Although, I would agree with you on that. Although I think perhaps we could probably maybe meet in the middle and say that perhaps good got too complacent.
Yes, yeah. which what is that great quote about the surest way for evil to survive is for good men to do nothing?
Precisely.
So, Matt, what we'll do is we'll have you do a radio ID. We'll do our our goodbye, you know, for the show, and then we'll have you do a radio ID.
Okay, great.
All right. Well, Matt, I think it's safe to say you passed the audition.
Excellent.
As said on Abbey Road. And so we absolutely loved having you on. It was far too long to make this happen, but we're glad that it did, because not only do you bring it for us on the web, on our website, coffeewithkenobi.com, but your candor and insights are very much appreciated, and we certainly look forward to having you on Coffee with Kenobi in the future.
I look forward to it. And I have to say, this is my first time on a podcast ever.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome. Well, after people hear this, you better go grab a microphone, because this is just your first step into a larger world.
Well said. Well said, Master Kenobi.
Well, thank you again, Matt, so much for having a cup of coffee with us. And we look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Likewise, I do the same. And thank you so much for the time. And I appreciate it very much.
And now a little Coffee with Kenobi extra. Hot chocolate with Kenobi. We have our initial thoughts from the Star Wars premiere party with some extra guests. Enjoy. Okay, now we've got the next guy. You want to say your name and age, buddy? Say, okay, this is Keaton, age 5. And what was your favorite part, buddy? Okay, then who's your favorite character? You want to tell anybody? No? Do you like Chopper the best? Little robot? Do you like him? No? All right, let's move it on over here.
Parker, age 13. I mean, 12. Oops. I liked it. I didn't really like how the Wookiees looked.
How come?
Because they look like a figure.
Okay, that's fair. And we've got one more special guest with us. And tell us your name and your age and what you thought about the show.
My name's Peyton, 15, and I'm not too thrilled yet because I think we're still too spoiled from Clone Wars.
That's fair. And Corey, what about you? You don't have to give us your age.
Strapping 21. Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. Definitely true to the classic original trilogy. It was a lot of fun as far as, you know, the chases and the scenes and all the sound effects were all very vintage. I felt it was a little animatronic as far as the gestures going as an animation. I think they'll grow on me. I think I'll just get used to that. It goes with this, the design of the characters and just the way they've laid out the just different animation style. I agree with these guys that the animation, the hair on some of the characters were a little plastic looking, but all in all, it was a lot of fun. I liked the cohesion of the family unit and the characters' interactions, and a lot of fun.
As for my thoughts, I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It took a long time to build, but once we got into the mystique of the Jedi, I enjoyed that a lot more. I thought the rationale for Kanan suddenly pulling out his lightsaber was a little rushed, perhaps, but that's kind of sort of what we saw in Episode 3 as well. So more on that later.
All right, we're going to go around and talk about our favorite character. I'll go first. My favorite character was probably Agent Kallus. He's pretty cool. Who's your favorite character? Come on! Come
just
on!
Say one word.
Just say...
Say donkey.
Who's your favorite one? You don't have a favorite one? You didn't like...
Oh, it was almost there. I saw it in there. We'll come back to him.
All right. Noah?
Ezra. I like Kanan.
I also like Agent Kallus. And I wanted to say Kanan, but I think Agent Kallus. I liked Ezra a lot more than I expected I would.
I liked Zeb.
I like Kanan because he was a father figure for Ezra.
As a special bonus, we have my lovely wife Deanna here, who was absolutely riveted by Rebels, weren't you, dear?
I didn't watch it.
And really, what was more important than Rebels?
I did the laundry.
Well, there you go. That's important, too. It's important to be clean and fresh while you're recording Coffee with Kenobi. That's exactly right. All right, well, there you have it, our special focus group here, composed of everyone from ages of 5 to 15, and that was Hot Chocolate with Kenobi for this special little section. And let's get a little, this is a podcast you're looking for on three. One, two, three.
This is a podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coryc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.